On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Ian Kadish of the Minnesota Twins organization. Ian, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you doing this. So my name is Ian Kadish. I'm the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator for the Minnesota Twins. Went to school at Marshall University and played baseball 4 years there. And then after Marshall, after I graduated there in 2011, had the opportunity to sign a non-drafted free agent contract with the Toronto Blue Jays. Spent three seasons there with them, and honestly was never any good. I'll be the first to admit it. And then got released in 2014 and kind of got caught in the middle of like what I want to do, right? I knew I wanted to do strength conditioning after baseball. Knew at some point I'd have to do an internship. But when I got released, I was kind of stuck in the middle of, you know, the summer internships had already started. The winter internships didn't start until after the season. Didn't want to just sit at home and do nothing. So I figured, why not give it one more go around? So I played 1 year independent league baseball, which was an experience in itself. And then, you know, I was still kind of up in the air after that, after the 2014 season, if I wanted to hang it up, if I wanted to move on. You know, I was old. You know, my entire career at every level that I was, so age wasn't my best friend. And so, you know, I thought I was just burnt out on the game. Been a tough year, traveling all over the country, getting released for the first time. Thought I was just burnt out and thought, like, okay, I'll just take some time away from the game. Still train as if I'm going to play in 2015. And then, you know, when I started to go pick up a baseball to throw again, I had zero desire to throw a baseball. I didn't even want to like be around the game still. So I knew it was time to call it quits right then and there. And then actually went home from the gym that day, started applying to any and every internship I could find on the internet. Was lucky enough to be able to get an internship with Ohio State football in 2014. And that was still to this day one of the best experiences of my life, being able to be a part of that program. You know, I was only an intern, but you know, I was lucky enough to be able to be around Coach Marotti and Coach Matus and all the great guys up there and learn from them. I think Coach Marotti and Coach Matus don't really know how big of an impact they've had on me. You know, I've kept in contact with Coach Matus over the years. But, I mean, it was, one of the best experiences I've had. So I was there for 9 months, and then my girlfriend at the time, now wife, you know, we found out we were pregnant. So it was kind of like one of those uh-oh moments where it's like, man, life like literally just got real, like bringing another human being into this world. You know, I'm working for essentially free. She was in her last year of physical therapy school doing clinicals. So she was working for free. None of us had jobs. Like, so we were freaking out there for a little bit. And so again, like I started applying to any and every job I could find on the internet. All over the country, you know, like we were willing to do anything. And was actually lucky enough to be able to find a job with Performance Compound in Tampa. Now it's called ASPI, for the 2015 baseball off season. You know, and I was very lucky. They're more NFL combine based, but you know, they had a good population of off season baseball being in Tampa. And you know, they saw my experience and, you know, they kind of just laid everything in my lap and said, hey, do whatever you want, run with it. You know, we trust you. So I was very lucky to be able to, you know, have the 2015 offseason baseball where, you know, I had about 30 pro guys, a bunch of high school guys, a few college guys, even some, you know, 10, 11, 12 year olds. So I, you know, I had a wide range of baseball population. You know, and, you know, I knew I wanted to get into pro ball, but, you know, when my wife and I found out we were pregnant, it was, you know, it was June. So there were no baseball jobs open. you know, they weren't going to be any open until the off season. So, you know, we needed to find something. So we moved down to Tampa, and, you know, just waited until the baseball jobs started opening in the off season, and again, applied to all of them that came up. You know, heard back from a few, and luckily heard back from the Miami Marlins, and was hired there as the high A strength coach for 2016. And was with them as well in 2017 as the GCL strength coach. And then was lucky enough in 2018 to be able to have the opportunity to be hired with the Minnesota Twins and, you know, join this organization. And it's been an absolute blast ever since. And I'm very thankful to have the opportunity I do and be able to work with the people that I do. It's pretty, very lucky and fortunate.
That's a good journey, man. And I didn't know some of those things about you. So those open up talking points for after the show for me.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about them here, but we'll talk about it after.
In a small time, I've been, I mean, in essentially 3 years, it's been a hectic 3 years, especially with a 2-year-old son, and now we're expecting another one. So, we don't live the calm lifestyle, to say the least.
Okay, so I didn't know that one either, so congrats on that one.
Thank you. We just found out, like a month and a half ago. So, to be honest, like, not the best timing by any stretch of the imagination, because she's due literally right before spring training starts, so it's going to be a tough spring training with lack of sleep, but it is what it is. We'll get through it and go with it.
It sounds like timing is not necessarily the strong point for you guys.
Yeah, I'm not the best at timing. Just the way it is.
When we met in spring training, it was literally the first day we met. I think we talked about programming for like 45 minutes, and
right.
I fired up the rest of the day. And so I've been wanting to get you on here to talk about it literally since that day. We finally have made the connection here. So let's talk programming. I want to go X's and O's, nitty gritty philosophy, any testing that you do to help determine your training, and then maybe what kind of autonomy you're giving your staff during the season to make adjustments and things like that. So anything you got for us, we are all ears here.
All right, so, yeah, I think that first day, I think we thought, yeah, you're right, 45 minutes to an hour, and, I mean, it was, I think once we started rolling, it was hard to stop, but,
right.
I would say we're more of like a principle-based philosophy, right? I don't think we don't want to get ourselves stuck in, you know, one avenue. I think, you know, we're better off if we're more principle-based, those principles for us are, you know, movement quality and movement patterns and, you know, basic movement patterns and being able to move well, right? I mean, I think if we can move well and emphasize the basic movement patterns, the hinge, the squat, the push, the pull, and the carry, it covers pretty much all of our bases. And, it's never made any sense to me of why anybody would want to add load to dysfunction. You know, I think especially as strength coaches, our number one job is to keep guys healthy and on the field. And if we're just going to add load to dysfunction, are we really doing our best to keep them healthy and on the field? I think if we're doing that, then we're creating an environment where the athlete is more susceptible to injury. Once an athlete can move well, I think they obviously need the work capacity to be able to withstand the demands of the game. We know that, you know, it's been well documented that the highest injury rate occurs during the first month of the season. It's my opinion that the athletes need to be prepared to be able to withstand, you know, the forces of the game, the demands of the game, and the workloads that are required during the season. I don't know how familiar you are with Tim Cabot, but we actually had the opportunity to bring him in this spring, and he talked with us a little bit, about workload. And, you know, it's funny because he's an extremely smart human being, but he was kind of reiterating exactly what kind of we've been saying is, you know, injuries occur where there's a high spike in workload. So if the athlete's not prepared from a physical preparation standpoint to be able to withstand the workload that's required once we get to spring training and into the season, there's a high, spike in that workload where that's where the injuries are going to occur. So if we can just, like, if we were to just do a 0 to 10 scale to make it easy, if we were to bring the athlete in, let's say he was on a three on the scale, but then when he comes to spring training, he's required to be at an 8, like, that's a big spike in workload. So if we can bring him in closer to that 8 to where the spike isn't as great, I think that can possibly help us. So number two, like, we need to develop a work capacity. And then once those two are covered, an athlete can move well, the work capacity is covered, I think we need to get the athlete strong. I think strength is going to help the athlete display their innate skill on the field, whether it be pitching, hitting, running, et cetera. I think all of those require force. And by no means are we creating power lifters, but we are trying to get strong, because being strong will help clean up a lot of other issues. I think we've chased the injury prevention bug for so long that we've also forgot about, like, what a robust athlete that moves well is more than likely to be, a resilient athlete as well. So I think, like, a robust athlete that moves well is more than likely to be a resilient athlete when compared to a weak athlete that doesn't move well. Because don't get me wrong, again, like, our main job is to keep guys healthy and on the field. And by no means are we chasing these big numbers in the 500-pound squat or the 600-pound or whatever. Each guy's going to be different. But, again, strength for that person, I think, will aid in maximizing the player's athletic and genetic potential, right? So I think those are, like, the three big principles for me. And then within that, it's kind of up for interpretation of how you want to use those three models to program. Everything that we do is built off the assessment we do for our guys. And our assessment drives our programming. So each one of our strength coaches and all of us will do an assessment each month. It just gives us an aspect of individualization for that player. Each guy has different limitations. And if we go back to it again, that, we're trying to maximize the athlete's athletic and genetic potential, but each body is made differently. So each body is going to have different limitations. Each body is going to have different needs. And it's our job, and we owe it to the athlete and the organization to find out what those limitations and what those needs are. I think athletes will, based off the assessment, we'll see that athletes need different loading schemes. They need different correctives, different mobility measures, different coaching cues even. I think within that, like, we're still going to groove the basic movement patterns, but there's some variance within those movement patterns, whether, it's a safety bar squat or a front squat or a goblet squat. I think there's a lot of variance within that. And then based off that assessment, we've created what we call our level system. And right now we have levels 1 and 2. And it's actually, to be honest with you, it's a little confusing now. I think going into 2019, we're going to refine it a little bit, refine the verbiage a little bit. But our level system is levels 1 and 2. So level 1 is essentially our kettlebell-based program, emphasizing movement quality, improving those basic movement patterns. Level 2 is the introduction to barbell and trap bar. And in level 2, you'll be doing, sets of 6s and sets of 4s, trying to develop that strength base. And then level 3 is a 5-3-1 model where we're just trying to get as strong as possible. And then looking forward to 2019, we're actually going to implement level 4, which will be our velocity-based program. And we're going to tinker a little bit with level 3 to where, we'll still use the 5-3-1 model, but we're going to add in some dynamic effort work and some West Side influence principles. I think that'll be a good change for 2019. I try to give the staff as much autonomy as possible. Each staff member will assess for their 25 or 35 players each month under the template and the system that we've created. I think that's a big part of it, right? I think, as coordinators and being in a leadership position, it's it's part of our job to be able to develop not only the players but the coaches as well. You know, and if they don't have the autonomy to program for themselves and program for their guys and kind of run their affiliate, you know, what's the development in that? You know, if they, I don't know, I know personally I wouldn't want to be a puppet. I don't want to treat anybody else like a puppet. You know, everybody has their own thoughts, own ideas. You know, so being able to give the staff some autonomy and some ownership of what we do is huge. You know, I think that's a big part of it too, is if the entire staff can take ownership in what we do and, you know, everybody be on the same page and giving the same message and communicating the same way, and, you know, it'll help with that athlete buy-in. And I also think there's a lot to be said for, and a lot that can be done for staff satisfaction other than monetary income. Like, yes, monetary income is great, dandy, awesome, but like, there's a lot to be said for staff satisfaction as far as responsibilities, you know, location during the season, location during the off season, family requirements, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I think that autonomy plays into it as well.
Well, it's like we were talking about off camera, our coordinator's coming in, and it's like he's going to say the same things that I say, and I'm going to say the same things he says. Like, and right. If the guys hear different things, then yeah. There's confusion there. So it sounds like you're on the right path with your guys then.
Yeah, I think that's a big part. I mean, you just said, I think communication is the biggest thing, right? I mean, like, if we aren't communicating with each other and then there's no communication between the players, then what message are we giving? You know, because the players aren't stupid. They, when we're unorganized and we don't have our stuff together and like we don't have our lives together, like they see it, they can see right through it. You know, so I think being on the same page and giving the same message is huge for, you know, the culture that we're trying to instill.
Agreed, completely. So we're rolling right now, and I'm intrigued to hear what you got on this one. What do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
So I got 2 points for you. And I don't necessarily think, you know, others will think I'm crazy for it, but I haven't heard it that often. But it's my opinion that I think we can get stronger in season. You know, I hate that M word, or what we, a lot of people say maintenance. I hate it. I would be perfectly happy if I never had to hear the word maintenance ever again. You know, I think when you say, I just want to maintain, or I think that's like the easy way out. Right. And I think if we're doing our jobs and we're giving the player the best program for them, there's no reason that they can't get stronger as long as they put in the effort throughout the season. Right. I think we have several examples up and down our system this year of guys hitting PRs or saying that I've never been this strong in my life. I've never felt this good in my life because, you know, we've pushed them and they put in some really great work and great effort throughout the season. You know, and guys are strong, and we're in the middle of August now. You know, so I think we can get stronger in season. I think the old maintenance, I'd be perfectly happy if that went away. And then the second thing is, I think the way I kind of look at it from a different scope, right? You know, when I was playing, I was a pitcher, and like I said, I was never any good. And I threw very, very unconventional. And I had several pitching coaches, you know, try to change my mechanics. But, you know, as I started getting more into strength and conditioning and realizing what was going on, you know, when they were trying to make these mechanical changes, I couldn't make them. And, you know, I think we as an industry, as a baseball industry, need to look at the player's physical limitations before we start implementing mechanical solutions, right? So if we take a pitcher, for example, and we want to lengthen his stride, well, rather than just trying to say drive down the mound more or lengthen your stride or whatever mechanical cue we would give them, I think we need to look at the physical limitations first. Like, does he have the adductor length and the hip mobility to even lengthen his stride? Does he have the hip-shoulder separation to be able to maintain that velocity that he already had. So we need to look at what physical limitations exist before mechanical solutions. You know, and I think that kind of opens up like a whole nother can of worms. But, you know, if we do that, that one only solidifies the communication between the strength and conditioning coach and the position coaches, whether it's hitting coach, pitching coach, manager, whatever. You know, and it breaks down some of those silos that have been created in the past where everybody's on the same page. Everybody's looking at it through, you know, the same lens per se. Now, granted, like a pitching coach will look at video in a different way than a strength coach will look at it. But if both people are in the room looking at the same video, the pitching coach can say, hey, Ian, what do you see from, you know, your perspective? And I can ask, hey, what do you see from your perspective? And then say, okay, well, let's look at his assessment. Let's see where his physical limitations exist. And I'm willing to bet 99.9% of the time what the pitching coach sees from a mechanical side and what we see from a physical limitation side will match up in the assessment. You know, and I think that's, you know, when we want to talk about skill acquisition, you know, if we address the physical limitations first, I think in the long run, it's only going to help the position coach's job become easier and implement those mechanical changes that we want. You know, and I think that way with the player from both sides of it, you know, we're doing what's best for the player's development. You know, so I would say those are the two big ones for me is one, we can get stronger in season. Two, I think we need to look at physical limitations before mechanical solutions. And I think I'll touch a little bit more on that physical limitation aspect later. But for me, those are two big ones.
The M word.
It's like a pet. I hate it. Like I said, I don't know. Like, I was a guy, and like, I get it. Like, a lot of guys don't like being in the weight room. Like, not everybody's going to like being in the weight room like you and I do. But, I mean, I think if you put the bare minimum effort in, like, you can still get stronger in season. I mean, like, just get in the weight room. The minimum required times per week or whatever, you know, is required. And, you know, if we're doing our job as strength coaches, we can get stronger. You know, I think we all know we need to keep intensity high in season and volume low. And, you know, that intensity will help drive the strength in season.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. Right there with you on that one. That's a whole nother rabbit hole that we could chase for a while. But
yeah, right, exactly. I know.
So what do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe in general and then specifically in baseball.
Yeah, so let's go general first. So I think we've already touched on it a little bit. I think communication, for one, you know, I think everything comes back to communication. And then two, I think we need to be personable. We need to be able to relate to the players or the staff and be able to develop a relationship with any type of person, old, young, American, Latin, European, whatever. Like, we need to be able to develop that relationship to show that, you know, we care about the player's well-being. We care and we enjoy what we do. And then lastly, in general, you know, I think we need to be a good human being, right? I think that's kind of very, very as simple as it gets. And then from a baseball aspect, I think the strength coach needs to be able to understand the biomechanics of baseball. Like, what goes on during a pitch? What goes on during a swing? And again, that'll take us back to the physical limitations aspect, but, you know, if we can understand the biomechanics of baseball, being able to identify those physical limitations is going to be a hell of a lot easier. And then, you know, that'll be able to help us communicate and speak the lingo of the hitting coaches and pitching coaches. It's funny because I think, you know, if you and I were to be in a room full of strength coaches, right, we could talk anatomy and training and programming until we're blue in the face. You bring a pitching coach, for the most part, and granted, like, I think we've gotten much better. Bring a pitching coach into that room, a lot of that stuff will be over their head. But then if you flip the script on that, you put pitching coaches or hitting coaches in a room together, they can talk hitting and pitching until they're blue in the face. But if you put a strength coach in that room, can the strength coach hold a conversation, or would that info be over his head? So I think you need to be able to understand the biomechanics of pitching and hitting, and and understand what goes into, you know, those movements. To be able to hold a conversation with the hitting or pitching coach and address what's going on. And then I think, you know, for everybody, I think we all need to have a growth mindset. The game is always evolving. I think we've all seen it. The game is changing at a rapid pace. And I think we need to evolve with it. I think we need to be open-minded. I think we need to be open to change. You know, nobody ever has it figured out, and there's always something to learn. You know, and I think if we approach everything with a growth mindset and an open mindset and be open to new ideas, you know, I think that sets all of us up for success. Now, that's not saying just completely throw out everything you've done for the past however many years you've been in it. But if you go into everything with an open mindset and be willing to listen, you know, more often than not, you can take one or two things from everybody and kind of form it to be your own way, if you will, right? But I think a growth mindset's huge for everybody, especially with how the game is changing in recent past.
I'm with you 100% there, man. There's good stuff for anybody or for people specifically in baseball. And to be able to speak the lingo and understand, and I mean, we're meatheads at the end of the day. Probably especially yourself and myself, maybe a little bit more than others. But when a guy's like, hey, play catch with me, and you can play catch with him, it goes a long way. And they're like, oh, my God, you can actually throw the baseball. Like, I know a thing or two about the game. I just keep my mouth shut at times.
Right, right. And I think, and I know we'll get into it a little more, but I think part of that is, you know, when it comes to, like, Con Ed, like I said, I know we'll get into it more, but part of that's, like, reading up on what's going on in the pitching world, what's going on in the hitting world, like, what's going on in the fielding world. Like, part of that is staying up to date on that as well, because the players are talking about it. So, I mean, I think we should probably know about it as well.
The players have so much access to things now that they can read, and if you're not there with them, like, they'll bring up something, whether it's baseball or strength and conditioning, and they bring it up and you don't know, it's like you're behind. Like,
yeah, right. Well, and especially in today's day and age, I mean, how many times do you walk in a locker room and guys are nose deep in their phones or their iPads or whatever, and it's like, one, they're probably either on Twitter, social media, or whatever, but there's so much information out there now that everybody has access to it. So, you know, and I think that's, you know, an awesome thing to be able to have, because I think it starts some conversation that, you know, can help evolve not only baseball, but the strength and conditioning industry, you know, and everybody in between, to where, you know, I think conversation is always a good thing.
I agree. It truthfully, for me, it's given me kind of a new avenue for relationships with guys. It's like, they'll see me reading a book and they'll be like, oh, what are you reading? And then, you know, I'll tell them and I'll be like, oh, what are you reading right now? And they're like, oh, I'm reading this. It's like, all right, I'll buy that book, I'll read it, and we'll talk about it. Right. And it's just been a whole new avenue for me. Just because, like you said, they have access to everything nowadays, so it's easy to see, hey, what are you reading? Okay, I'll read it too, so that we can speak the same language when we have this conversation.
Yeah, and then, like, what does that do for, like, buy-in, right? Like, I mean, if you can have that conversation with the athlete, I mean, like, what's the old saying? They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Like, if you're reading that book and you're reading what they're interested in and you're trying to educate yourself on, I mean, what message does that give the athlete? I mean, you're much more likely to get the athlete to listen to you and buy into what you're trying to tell them because of that.
Agreed. Right there with you. I got a few guys that I do some book swapping with here that when I finish a book, I give it to them and then they give it to me and we chat about it. So
yeah, I'm a big, like, Audible, right? Like, so Audible's huge for me, but, like, there've been several times this year where I'll send an Audible book to, you know, a player or staff member, and then, you know, we'll talk about it. So, you know, I think that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, let's go into that then. So where are you going for continuing ed? Any good books you have to recommend or podcasts to listen to? What do you got?
To be honest with you, I don't read much. I listen, right? I think I have a hard time with sitting down and opening a book and reading. Like, I'll read a page and, like, okay, I got to go back and read it again because my mind just wanders. So I actually get more out of listening and watching. So like I said, Audible is my go-to. And I try to listen to one book every month. And you know, the books that I've thoroughly enjoyed that, you know, that I tend to go towards leadership and culture books just because that's what makes me tick. I think being a part of, you know, Ohio State football and that culture, it kind of got my mind racing when it comes to culture. So that's kind of where I gravitate towards. But obviously, like Extreme Ownership by Jocko, I think that's probably been said on every episode you've had, right? And then some four other ones that I just kind of wrote down real fast are a book called Smart Cuts by Shane Snow. It's a really, really good book. It was actually recommended to me by the rehab pitching coach for the Marlins last year, who was actually my pitching coach in Indy ball. He recommended that to me. And essentially that book, you know, we're always – so they differentiate between smart cuts and shortcuts, right? And they say shortcuts are the unethical, you know, easy way out, whereas smart cuts are like the intentional, like thoughtful moves. So if you were related to like a promotion-based way, it's they basically say it's not always about the promotion and going up the chain. Sometimes you need to move laterally on the chain in order to propel yourself forward. That was a really, really good book. And then The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle was a really, really good one. He had a lot of good points about, you know, what a successful, winning, positive culture looks like, how you instill it, how you mold it. And then another one was Leadership and Self-Deception by the Arbinger Institute. That's not very well known, but that it'll get you thinking, man. It's a really, really good book. It's based off of like an office setting, but it kind of tells this story about how one of these employees is what they call or what they term in the box, you know, and they look at, you know, the relationships he has with his wife, with his coworkers, with his bosses, with his friends, and the effect that it has on him personally because he's in the box and he isn't open to opening his box and thinking about, hey, what's going on in these people's lives that are making them react or do what they do. And so it essentially basically talks about like not being so self-centered and realizing everybody has different things going on in their lives that are affecting their day-to-day well-being. That's a really, really good one. And then lastly, I've probably read this one, or I should say listened to this one, 5+ times already, just because, you know, it's probably my favorite book of all time. It's called Above the Line by Wayne Coffey and Urban Meyer. It's actually Urban Meyer's book about the 2014 national championship season. And that's, to be honest, like that's my favorite book just because, you know, I saw it firsthand. I was part of it for the small time that I was there. It was to be able to listen to Urban's take on it and on that season. That's a really, really good one.
My reading list is ever expanding, and so I've got a few more from you. Thank you for that.
Sure. I know. I feel like my list was always is growing. I was like, man, I'm never going to get caught up on this list. So it's like, but I've done much better when I start listening to books compared to, you know, when I started reading them, especially like with the travel, listening is my go-to. I think I don't remember the last time I listened to like music away from the field. It's either a podcast or a book.
Yeah. You don't have the bus rides that we do up here in Portland. So yeah. I choose to read the books instead of listen, but I understand completely what you're saying.
Well, there's a little bit of downfall of listening too, right? Like, I'll catch myself, I'll start listening to it on flight, and I'll fall asleep, and I'm like, and I'll wake up, I'm like, man, like, well, like, how long was that flight? I got to rewind however many hours the flight was so I can get caught back up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I know. I know what you're talking about. So what advice do you have for others in the field?
The biggest one is network. I think, you know, get out of where you are and go network and talk to people. And cold call people and email people and don't be afraid to introduce yourself. You know, I think if you can network and expand the connections you have, you never know when that's going to come back to help you. You know, whether it be, you know, a promotion where you are, whether it be, you know, a move, whether, you know, whether you have something come up with family and you need to make a move to be closer to family. I mean, if you network, I think, you know, it can pay endless dividends. And, you know, especially from, you know, just talking, not necessarily from, you know, a job perspective, but if you have questions about, you know, hey, like, this is what I'm seeing with this athlete, this is what I think, but, you know, what's your take on it? Just to kind of bounce ideas and thoughts off of, you know, I think can help with our continued development. And then the other thing is, don't be afraid of change. I think we should always be on the constant pursuit of knowledge. We will never, ever know everything, but I think if we can be on the constant pursuit of knowledge and continue to learn every day and be open to change, I think you're going to be a lot more successful in the long run than if you were to be very close-minded, stuck in your ways, not, you know, willing to listen to other people's ideas and thoughts and so forth. It's like, again, I think the old saying, the day you stop learning is the day your career's over. So I think we need to continue to learn, whether it be books, podcasts, from each other. I think conversations got a little lost because of the social media you know, I think conversation is more often than not better than books and podcasts, because the conversation can help you with what other people are experiencing firsthand. You know, I think experience is a huge part of it. And if you can gain as much experience as humanly possible, both personally and from others, again, I think it's going to help with, you know, how good of a strength coach you are.
Yeah, I mean, prime example would be this. I mean, this episode right here is, you know, we talked about programming and whatnot, but if people really want to get to know your thoughts on programming, they have to reach out to you, right? They're only getting a small sample of your thoughts and your process for programming. And if they wanted to know more, they have to reach out to really get your full thoughts on it.
Right. And I think like you're a good example. Like, I think you should be owed a lot of credit where, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't, you know, like what we did in spring training where we had never met or even talked before, and we walked up right to each other, introduced ourselves and like hit it off and started talking before we knew it, it was like, okay, we got to get back to work. Like, I mean, I think that's what it takes, right? I mean, like, you can't be afraid to go up and introduce yourself and talk and conversate with other people. I know, like, I still carry around what I call like my little black book where, you know, if I meet a strength coach for the first time and I have a conversation with him, when I'm done, I'll go over and I'll write down some notes on the guy. Like, Chris Messina, you know, Portland, Maine, Boston Red Sox, where you're from, married, moving to Phoenix. I mean, like, that. I'll write down notes so, you know, I'll remember the conversation I just had. And again, that's just kind of the way I learn. But you never know. Like, you know, what if with all the staff turnover we have in baseball, what if, you know, somebody applies and you've had a conversation with them, well, I can go back to my little book and say, okay, like, awesome dude, knows his shit, like, good guy, like, good fit for the staff. Yeah, I give him my backing. Like, I think that's kind of what I think when I, you know, try to remember as many conversations as possible.
In defense of that conversation, the second you brought up, like, West Side and 5-3-1, I was hooked anyway, so... I wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm a meathead at heart. You know, I love powerlifting. It's kind of what I do. I'm actually one of our other strength coaches talked me into doing my first powerlifting meet this off season. So, you know, I've kind of been missing like the competition aspect. So I think like it gives me a good outlet to compete both with myself and, you know, with these other strength coaches that. You know, we train with in Fort Myers that, you know, so I love West Side. I love powerlifting. I think, Louis is an extremely, extremely smart person and, he's a character, no doubt, but like the info that he puts out, especially like on his podcast is some really, really good stuff. And I think like I guess another book you could have thrown in, or is this book of methods that I think I've probably highlighted every line in that book, multiple colors, pink, yellow, green, purple, whatever. Just trying. I mean, I've read it a few times. That's a really good read too. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of that West Side influence model.
Yeah, that's one of the books that I have notes written all over in. So
yeah, it's almost like you write your own book within the book. That's a really, really good one. And I think like if you read it once, you're not going to be like, you can take some pieces of it, but I don't think you'll fully comprehend what's truly being said in that book. So I've read it 3 times, and I want to read it again this off season just because there's always something to pick up from that.
Every time you open it, there's new information for you that you're like, man, I didn't think about that last time.
Right. Yeah, no, that's awesome.
So I know you got a little Sunday fun day going on. We do as well here in Akron, but I think we can squeeze in a lightning round. What do you got?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so first question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
So I don't know if I can give one specific person. I've been very, very lucky enough to be able to be around, some extremely smart people. So if I had to like narrow it down, I think just going in the order that I came across them, one, Donovan Santos with the Blue Jays, and Chris Joyner, CJ, they're the coordinator and big league guys there when I was with Toronto, and they're very influential in exposing me to something and that I'd never seen before. And I still have a really, really good relationship with Dono and Dana now, I think they're really, really good people. I also need to give credit to like I said, Coach Moradi and Coach Matus up at Ohio State. I went into Ohio State as a 26-year-old unpaid intern to where I didn't know shit, right? I mean, so and Coach Matus was, very instrumental in, sitting me down and teaching me everything he could. We would have whiteboard discussions a couple times a week. We would talk programming. We would program for ourselves, and we'd actually go do it ourselves. I think Coach Matus was huge. And he's a very, very smart person. He's actually the first person that introduced me to West Side. Being up in Columbus, it was cool to be able to see all the smart and strong gyms up there from, Westside to JL Holdsworth. And, I at the time I had no idea like how big and how like smart those gyms are, but I wish I could have taken more advantage of that. I think Eric Cressy, I owe a lot to, when I played, in the off seasons, I spent my off seasons in Boston training under Eric Cressy. He was very open and allowed me to come to his staff in services when I was a player to where, it exposed me to things that I had no idea about. Just being able to have a relationship with Eric and bounce ideas off of him I'm very thankful for that relationship. And luckily when I was in Jupiter with the Marlins, he has that facility over in Jupiter now that, he was very open to where I'd go over there a few times every week during the off season, just kind of shadow and watch and talk and get to know them better and see what was going on and get to know his interns and get to know his staff. Between Eric Cressy and Shane Rye, and Brian Kaplan over there, they've been very, very instrumental in helping me get to where I am. I think my pitching coach when I was playing, name is Mike Mondrell out of Cincinnati. At the time, back in 2011, I actually started working with him in 2004 and worked with him, for 10 plus years. But he was doing like the whole weighted balls in 2004. He was doing, everything that we're now hearing today back then. And he was a very old guy. He actually just passed away a few months ago. But you know, he was old, but he had that growth mindset that we had talked about, where he wasn't afraid to change. And he wasn't afraid to admit that he was wrong. And even up until the month before he passed away, he would come down to Florida and we would go out to dinner and we would talk for hours on end about, you know, what he's seeing, what I'm seeing, kind of bounce ideas off of. So, you know, being able to have mentors and influences like that, I've been extremely lucky to, be able to surround myself with people much smarter than I am, and learn from them every day. I mean, it's made me who I am today for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely quite the list.
Yeah, as I said, like, I can't. It wouldn't be fair to just give one person. So, yeah, it's a long list, but those are the three or the four big mentors that I have to give thanks to.
I got you. They all had significant parts in your life, so you got to give them all shouts.
Right.
One piece of equipment to train with. I almost positive I know the answer.
I got to go with a kettlebell, man. I think, if I can get a heavy kettlebell, I'd be perfectly happy. I think, we can do some strength work with a kettlebell. You can do some dynamic effort speed work with a kettlebell. You can do all your basic movement patterns. You can do the hinge, the squat, the push, the pull. You can do a carry. So just give me one kettlebell and I can get all my bases covered. No questions asked.
Yeah, okay, so I was right. biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally? I might know this one too.
So to be honest with you, like, professionally, I don't know if I have a big accomplishment. I'm one of those person or one of those people that the expectations I have for myself will always, always, always outweigh the expectations others have of me. I've been very lucky to have the opportunities that I do, but I don't know if I've had like a big accomplishment professionally that I can say like this is hands down, clear and away, the best accomplishment I've ever had. I'm always striving to be better and grow and learn. I don't think it ever stops. But personally, I think one, the day I married my wife, and I think a tie for that is the birth of my son. Both were extremely life-changing and, completely changed my world for the better. My wife's awesome. My wife's actually a physical therapist and much smarter than I am. And it's funny because, we'll get into some heated debates at home about, what she knows from physical therapy aspect. It's, like I said, she's extremely smart. She's extremely good at what she does. She obviously holds down the fort when I travel, when I'm at work with a 2-year-old son who is testing our limits right now with being 2 years old. She's awesome. She's absolutely awesome. And then our little boy Knox is he's a handful, but there's nothing like coming home to a 2-year-old running to the door screaming "Daddy" every night. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. No matter what happened at work that day, coming home and hearing his daddy scream is the best thing my ears can hear.
That's how I feel with my dog. She doesn't yell "dad," but she just makes a bunch of crazy noises and brings me toys to play with. So kind of know the feeling, kind of don't, but
yeah.
Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Man, so I would say a professional baseball player, but obviously I wasn't good. But to be honest with you, it would be something like in human resources. I think like what makes me tick is the culture aspect and getting people to change and be open-minded and having a growth mindset. So I think it'd be really, really cool to work with a large corporation in the human resource department and, go into these corporations and effectively, implement whatever change is needed. I think, one of the coolest classes I took in college was a human resource class, and it was all about change. And it was, it went into the details of what it takes to get people to change. And, one piece that stuck with me still to this day is it's human nature to resist change, because we don't know what the future holds. We only know what the present holds, and that's what's comfortable to us. But I think part of, you know, having that growth mindset is being open to change and you know, being in allowing yourself to change. You know, so I think that's really, really cool. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to where I think you could, it'd be a lot like what we do now. I don't think any one day would be the same. So that's what I would say. I can't see myself as like a sitting at a cubicle from a 9 to 5. I have a hard time sitting still for 5 minutes as is. Getting people to change and working like a human resource department would be awesome.
Yeah, the meatheads in us don't like to sit around for very long.
I can't.
Okay, last one. You got a little guy at home.
Okay.
How long until he starts deadlifting?
Man, so I'm actually, it's funny you ask, because like for his first birthday, I tried to talk my wife into buying like those plastic Rogue weight sets, but she put the nix on that on this. So I think I might try to like sneak buy him like one of those plastic weight sets for Christmas this year and just not tell her and then let him just throw it around. Yeah, I had like, I'm sure we've all seen it, that video on the internet where the little boy lifts it up and throws the weight and just screams. Like, that's what I picture my son being, especially with how loud and wild he is right now. Like, that would be my son. But, I mean, I think he's got a perfect squat right now, so.
Better to ask for forgiveness than permission with the weight set, right? Just
yes. All, I will always ask for forgiveness.
Honey, look how happy he is with these new pants.
Yeah. It's another toy to add to the mix of our clutter that we have in our house right now.
But that's a good toy to have. That's the right one.
Well, I have a little like garage gym going right now, so like I'm excited for the off season to be able to train in the garage and, you know, and have him kind of hang out with me and play with his toys in the other corner on the other side of the garage. Not long.
Good. I like that answer. Well, like I said, we kind of only scratched the surface with some of this stuff. If people want to get in touch with you and learn more either about yourself or your programming methods, your thoughts, where can we get more information from you?
Yeah, so my email is iankadish@twinsbaseball.com. I have all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, the Facebooks. My Instagram and Twitter is iKadishStrength. So at iKadishStrength, and then Facebook's just Ian Kadish. I think you know firsthand, I love talking, I love learning, I love talking shop. I try to answer all messages and emails that I get. I might not answer them immediately, but I will definitely get around to them and give an answer, you know, as soon as possible for sure.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. A lot of good laughs and, more importantly, a lot of really good information in this one, and we'll be talking soon.
Yeah, man. Thanks. I appreciate you doing this again.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Ian. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was really awesome to talk shop with him and actually get into the X's and O's of programming a little bit. Three things that I took from Ian: have a growth mindset, be open to change, and be a good human. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.